Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and All Mystery Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
You are my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. Before we begin today's show, I want to give a huge congrats to our big sister podcast show, Electric Sisterhood, for celebrating their 400th episode. 400 episodes! Do you have any idea how hard it is to achieve something like that? It's beyond nuts! That's like four times the amount needed for syndication, if we're talking TV programs, of course. But 400 episodes, over 400 hours of content, they're almost at like Simpsons numbers, although still not at One Piece count and not even close to Doraemon. But anyways, a big round of applause for Ninja and Panda for their hard work and dedication, and I look forward to 2 years down the line when they reach the 500,000 mark. With that, let's kick off today's show. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start things off nice and cool with some Japanese jazz in the form of Pez. This comes off of their Tito Sidori release, and they call it Halio no Natsu.
悲しみをそっと包み込む時、
from her How Crazy Your Love album. Currently, Yui is fronting a new band called Flower Flower, who should be very close to releasing their very first album in the near future. Whenever I use the term Oscar-worthy, it's for those types of films that have achieved something that others can't seem to grasp. Sometimes they wind up walking away with a statue or two, whereas others don't and get bypassed for films that really didn't deserve it. I still reel over the fact that years ago, Crash, which in my opinion was a very terrible movie, won Best Picture over Brokeback Mountain, which was a more memorable and thought-provoking film. I bring this up because I fear that this is going to happen at next year's Oscars, where some other film is going to win Best Picture over a much better film. And one such better film is the one I just saw this past weekend, and it's a movie called Calvary. Calvary was written and directed by John Michael McDonagh, brother of Martin McDonagh, who wrote In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths. This is his second movie, the first being The Guard, which years ago we at B3 put on top of a very special pedestal for its filmmaking greatness. Calvary also stars Brendan Gleeson as a priest who has just been told that he'll be murdered in a week as repentance for the abuse suffered by those from the clergy. Now, Gleeson plays a good-natured priest, one that's done nothing wrong and has just tried to make the world he's surrounded in a better place. However, the priest that abused this mystery threatener, I think that's a word, threatener, this priest has been long dead. So the guy decides to make a shocking statement of sorts by killing a good priest rather than a bad one. From there, this priest, Father James, that's his name, his world starts to go down into, well, a downward spiral. His dog is dying of cancer, and his daughter comes home after attempting suicide. Now, for those out there who are now probably saying, wait, priests can't have daughters. Father James, he was once a married man whose wife died, and then when that happened, he decided to join the church. So, yeah, I guess that's allowed. The village he has lived in is filled with people who, let's just say, they become a tad clouded over looking towards the church for answers, and instead somewhat ridicule Father James for what he stands for and who he believes in. And it's a real shame, honestly, the abuse that Father James goes through throughout this movie. Because we hear about all the bad priests in the world, and because of that, we forget that there are good ones that are actually trying to make things better for those around them. Although you can probably say the same thing about every other religious person or people, there are rabbis, monks, imams, shinshokus, or Shinto priests as we call them, and other members of their respected beliefs that can be either good or bad. You can probably make the same film and put a different religion in it, and it'll roughly be the same thing. Now, Calvary is a fantastic movie, and it shows why the McDonagh brothers are considered to be Ireland's best storytellers. While Martin does a great job sprinkling drama into his comedies, John Michael does an equally fine job with sprinkling comedy into his dramas, and I hope there's like no sibling rivalry between the two of them, because I personally would love to see the two of them work together on a project, which could wind up being quite the bipolar masterpiece. Gleeson does an amazing job as Father James, and he should be like one of the most talked about like actors and one of the most talked about roles of the year. However, there are two other actors in this film that really surprised me with their roles, and they're people that I've always associated with comedies from the mind specifically of Graham Linehan. Then those two people are Chris O'Dowd, who we all know as Roy from the IT Crowd, and Dylan Moran from Black Books. The darkness that these two actors tread in Calvary was something that I'd never expect either of these actors to do. And a lot of credit has to be given to them for showing that they have such an incredible range. The movie is beautifully shot too. Like, just watching this film makes me want to visit Ireland and see the sights that were featured in it. Just gorgeous filmmaking, almost as if you can just touch those green hills and thunderous oceans with the way they angle it. Brilliant work, it must be commended. And most of the credit has to go to this movie's cinematographer, Larry Smith. Now, this is usually a part of the review where I say that everyone should go see this movie. But there is a problem with that. You see, Calvary is not a film for everyone, which may be the reason why it might not be nominated for any awards anytime soon, although I would love to be proven wrong. There are some things in the movie that may bother some people, and there's only one way you'll know if you can sit through the entirety of this film. If the urge to walk out of this movie appears in your belly after the very first sentence is uttered, then you may not want to stick around for the rest. If you can stomach that one sentence, then prepare yourself for an incredibly thought-provoking film from one of Ireland's best filmmakers. Whew. Yeah, Calvary, that was a very dark movie to talk about. So, I'll tell you what. The next segment, I'll discuss a more lighthearted fare. Some anime comedy shenanigans. It'll help balance things out, I think. So, for now, let us return to this week's playlist. Up next, we've got the video game rock band Lame Genie, who just dropped their first album, Throwback Nerds Day, on Bandcamp. Here's their rendition of the song featured in the first level of Rocket Knight Adventures, a very underappreciated video game in my honest opinion. We'll be right back. 1991 album Namae o Sukete Yaru. That was Spitz with Mune ni Saita Kini Roi Hana. Spitz is one of the biggest bands in Japan, with all of their albums since 1994 debuting in the top four, including 7 number one debuts. Sometimes I'm in the need of some brainless anime humor, but as odd as it sounds, I want maybe a pinch of creativity in it, so it doesn't make me feel like I've wasted my time. Since getting Hulu Plus, I've been seeing a show, a bit of an older one, popping up that I have been wanting to see for a while, but had no idea what to really expect. Finally, I bit the bullet and just started watching it, and thank God I did, because it was very entertaining. The anime I am talking about is called Kill Me Baby, or Baby, Please Kill Me. The premise of the show is very simple. It follows a normal but stupid high school girl named Yasuna, who befriends this twin-tailed girl named Sonya. Now, Sonya isn't your average student, though, because she is actually a trained assassin. The two of them go about their slice-of-life daily routines, with Sonya attempting to murder Yasuna every time she tries, and sometimes succeeds at making her do some pretty stupid things. Whether it's going fishing, hunting for legendary snakes, or just trying out strange foods, the two of them take on the day, with each of them sticking together like napalm and silly putty. There are a couple other characters too. One of them is a ninja named Agili, who talks like she just smoked a really big bag of weed. I don't know if she's a good ninja or she's just simply lucky, but her tactics are pretty dumb. Although there is this like really funny moment involving a certain sleight of hand when they are first introducing her. Then there's this other character who shows up in a couple episodes, and she's just known as Unused Character. She was apparently supposed to be like a part of the main show, but Yasuna took all of her traits, so she's like stuck sporadically appearing here and there, swearing revenge on the cast. You know, I wouldn't be too surprised if there's someone out there going, "Unused Character is my waifu!" But I don't know. At least Rie Kugimiya voices her. I'm a really big fan of Rie Kugimiya. I love her in Hayate, Toradora, Gintama, Familiar of Zero. I think she's just a fantastic character actress. I know she kind of gets a little bit typecast as a tsundere, but whenever she does take on a role, she really owns up to it. Now, not much else is there to talk about Kill Me Baby. It's just a random anime comedy with characters doing random things. Sometimes it actually feels a little bit like Nichijou, only here the comedic punchlines are just pulled off better. Maybe it's because it never gets tiresome watching Sonya beat the shit out of Yasuna. I also love the theme songs, with the opening really fitting right in with the comedic tone. Its end theme, on the other hand, well, we'll get back to that in a moment. If you've got Hulu Plus, I really suggest checking out Kill Me Baby, and if you wind up really loving it, you can then buy it from Sentai Filmworks. There's an English dub that's pretty well done too, but it's very different from the Japanese one, especially for Agiri's voice actress. If you need a quick laugh, then by all means, watch Kill Me Baby. I don't think you'll be disappointed. You may not get some of the humor, but for the most part, you'll leave each episode with a smile on your face. Now, getting back to the end theme of the show, we're actually going to spin it for all of you right now. If you go onto YouTube, there is a very cool dance that goes to it, appropriate considering it surprisingly has like a really good melody for all you ravers and club hoppers. The song is called Futari no Kimochi no Honto no Himitsu, and is performed by the voice actresses for Sonya and Yasuna, Mutsumi Tamura and Chinatsu Akasaki. And I seriously hope it gets stuck in your head.
Good. fat lug, smoked out cowpoke, sequined mountain lady. Fiddly digits, itchy britches. I love you all. I love you all. I love you all. I love you. Stench of cigarettes and stale urea. I love you all. Prodigal son waits to return to where the dogs play pool.
One of the songs featured in the new movie Frank, starring Michael Fassbender as a papier-mâché head-wearing musician who likes to keep his identity secret to even his fellow band members. The film is loosely inspired by the late comedic songmaster Frank Sidebottom, who became popular for his stage presence and incredibly strange but funny TV programs. A couple weeks ago, the PS4 launched a demo simply known as PT, which had you go around the same part of a haunted house all over the place, like all over again, just over and over and over, and there were spooks, crying fetuses, bloody fridges, and freaky lights flickering all over the place. And if you were able to complete the demo, you were then treated to a teaser where it was announced that this was but a taste to expect from the new Silent Hill game brought to us by Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro, and starring our favorite Boondock Saint Norman Reedus, or Daryl from The Walking Dead if you're a fan of that show. Now, I say if you finish the demo, because there is no telling how you do it. There are multiple reports as to how to complete it, with each one contradicting the other. It's batshit insane. I've actually spent over 5 hours with the demo and have yet to even finish it. I'm waiting for like that second baby to laugh, or is it the third baby to laugh? I don't know how many fucking babies are supposed to laugh before the phone's supposed to ring, but I'm still waiting for it. It's just not happening. And every time that ghost shows up, I shouldn't be even scared anymore. But nope, it makes me jump out and I flinch. I just can't stand it. And it's the frustration of trying to beat this demo that is just driving me nuts, specifically that last part of the level. And perhaps that's the point of PT. It's a demo that's made to make you go mad. As mad as any resident of Silent Hill. It should be stupid. But at the same time, the way it was presented, it needs to be applauded. Yeah, I actually spent more time with PT than I did with Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes. A free demo wound up being longer than a paid campaign. That does not happen often. And I'm going to talk later on, not in this episode, but maybe in a future thing about my experience with Ground Zeroes, because I finally got to play it, but not in this episode. But anyways, if you have a PS4 and haven't tried PT, then go ahead and download it. It's free. And if you've beaten it, though, please tell us how. Comment below on the official B3 post, our Facebook page, or write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com and share with us how you got out of that house. Now let's get back to some music. Coming up, we've got Lintos de Sigule, and this is a track from their Inspiration is Dead release. This is I Not Crazy Am You Are. We'll be right back. This town from their Stick 'em Up LP. A few tour dates in Japan have been listed for next month, so if you're in the area and want to check them out, visit pissval.com. That's PISVAL.com for more info. I was looking at some of the pictures from last week's Comic Cut, the biggest doujinshi fair in the world, and first things first, a lot of great cosplay. Some of them put even the best in America to shame. However, I saw something there that was a little bit peculiar. In a few photos taken, there were images of cameramen getting upskirt close to some of these cosplayers, practically touching their asses with their camera lenses. When I saw these pictures, I was just like, holy shit, what the hell's wrong with these people? Now, I know I'm not a saint of any kind. You know, my hidden yet small collection of porn attests to that. And to all of you listeners out there judging me on owning these quasi-indie films, as I like to call them, although I did steal that from a Kevin Smith comic book. Well, I bet if we took a look on your computer, we'd find plenty of dirty things on there, that's for sure. But let us not get off topic and focus on this issue that has happened here at Comic-Con, and that issue is the lack of etiquette towards cosplayers. There's this concept of looking but no touching, and if you are taking pictures, you always make sure you ask permission before you merely click away. But what went down at Comic-Con was just, it's just an incredible invasion of one's personal space. These women as well as some of the men, are like surrounded by cameramen. From all angles, they're literally trapped with no place to escape if they need to, which could be possibly dangerous if some creep comes to harass them. And we've seen something a little bit tamer. I don't want to say tamer. We've seen something on similar grounds happening at other cons, sometimes with like worse results, especially with a couple of reports I heard from the recent San Diego Comic-Con. But what shocks me about this whole thing is that some of these cosplayers at Comic-Con are just taking this sort of up-close and impersonal interaction with a stride. Maybe it's an ego thing where they know that these otaku ain't gonna tap what's underneath their skirts. But at the very same time, they need to be careful and be aware of their surroundings. Think back to what happened at that AKB48 event where that madman attacked the group members. And they had security at that event. There's no security whatsoever that I see at this Comic-Con, at least from the pictures that were taken. Maybe there was some in the background, but there weren't anyone there protecting these cosplayers from possible harassment and physical harm. What I'm saying here is that these cameramen who attend Comic-Con need to remember that they have to respect the personal space of cosplayers. Don't be shoving your lens up the skirts and thongs of these people dressing up as their favorite characters. This is just wrong on so many levels. Plus, there's a thing called a zoom button on your camera that you can use. You don't have to physically go up there. Although, I don't want to promote that sort of thing on this show. Please do not take pictures like that at any public event. It's just wrong. And to all you cosplayers that attend these events, especially any future Comic-Con, just be aware. I'm not shaming cosplayers, by the way. I would never do that. They're there just to have fun in their outfits that they work their butts off making. So, in review, only take pictures of cosplayers with their consent, and if they give you the okay, don't give them a colonoscopy with your camera lens. Doesn't that sound good? Alright. You know, I showed this piece that I just said to my friend Scarlett, who we've had on this show many times from Scarlet Rhapsody, and she pointed out that this sort of thing has happened at many other Comic-Cons in the past. She even told me of this one incident where this one cosplayer was basically at the edge of a building surrounded by cameramen, and she had no escape, and she could have fallen off the building and died. And that's just not good. That's just wrong on so many levels. I don't know. It's people just need to learn etiquette when it comes to taking pictures. Whether it's at Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, Anime Boston, Otakon, any convention, just any place, just in general, okay? Please respect people, respect cosplayers, because they're just trying to have fun in an environment that makes them most comfortable. And if you take away that comfort from them, they're just going to be frightened away from ever attending and basically not have fun anymore whatsoever. So please remember that. If you're a cameraman and you go to these events, please respect the cosplayers in any way that you can. Okay? Please, let's just remember that. All right. Let's return to our playlist. Let's spin a little local flavor with Godsmack, and this comes off of their newest album, 1,000 Horsepower, which we awarded 4.5 stars and deemed a true return to form for the band. This song is called Something Different.
Something wrong, something right, something missing. Something black, something light, something different. Don't you ever feel you need to speak to me that way? Something black, something
something light, something different. Something wrong, something right, something missing. Don't you ever feel you need to speak to me that way?
Don't
Tommy the Peep Show with a track from their Schoolgirl Pop album. That one goes by the name Give Me a Letter. They've been inactive since 2003, and no word if they'll ever be back in the limelight. I hope so, though. It'd be cool if they got back together out of the blue. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Basher Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbashingbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com and on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/bostonbashingbrigade. And don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Ash, including Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, Any Issues Program. We are coming closer to the next event us at Ash will be attending, and that is the Boston Festival of Indie Games, which is on Saturday, September 13th. Tickets are $10 or two or more at $7.50 apiece. For more information, please visit www.bostonfig.com. Let's end the show with a brand new track from Vamps, the side project of Lock on Ciel's Hide and Oblivion Dust's Kaz. It's a pirate's life for the duo, as evident in this song. It's called The Jolly Roger. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.